Hello, you are listening to What's the Deal? JP Morgan's investment banking series on the Making Sense podcast. I'm David Rawlings, your host and country head for JP Morgan in Canada. Today, we are going to dive into the economic and investment banking outlook for the Europe, Middle East, and Africa region in 2024. Joining me are two special guests, Connor Hillary and Dorothy Blessing, co-heads of EMEA Investment Banking at JP Morgan. Connor, Dorothy,
thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks, David. It's great to be doing this session here together.
David, thanks for having us.
So let's dig into the economic landscape in EMEA. Dorothy, can you maybe share how our clients are feeling about the current environment?
Well, if we go back to 2022 with the outbreak of the war in Ukraine, energy crisis, soaring inflation, leading into 2023 with the conflict in the Middle East and economic uncertainty. And here we are, beginning of 2024. Clients look at the challenging environment, but they also look at the more positive developments over the last few months and the signs of rebound. Recent data suggests inflation is coming down, energy prices falling, and we see a faster than expected price pressure moderation. We see all of that, actually, despite the supply chain disruption in the Red Sea. And these are really signs of improving conditions for a rebound of activity this year. With inflation coming down, we also see this leading to real wage growth, ultimately helping to improve consumer spending. On the other hand, we also see easing of the conditions in the credit side, which will support further investments and strategic activity. So I think that we are really seeing that momentum changing.
Connor, let's shift to you. So with this more positive economic outlook, are there certain sectors or certain markets that you expect to be more active this year?
Yeah, look, I think it's interesting, just seeing quite a bit of life in the UK just over the last few weeks with bids for five public companies. We expect to see growing levels of activity in that market. You know, there are plenty of companies with strong balance sheets thinking, how do I grow? So that could spur further M&A. And quite a number of very attractively valued companies who could be bid targets in the market. We expect Germany to be busy and quite a number of other parts of the region. On the industry side, healthcare is going to be active. We've seen some very big deals in North America. Expect Europe to follow. Energy transition will be a big driver of capital raising and M&A. And we may see some consolidation in the banking sector. That's long overdue. The banking sector in Europe is highly fragmented. And we've seen some consolidation in the UK, for example, just in the last week with the planned takeover of Bank Virgin Money by Nationwide. So that's an area where we may see a bit more activity.
Yeah, and then I think MENA is an important part of it. And that clearly is a growth area where we see a lot of activity, not only investments from that region to other parts of the world, M&A activity, capital markets activities, and then tech. Look, tech continues to be a segment that is undergoing growth, but also if we just look at the changes coming through AI, that will spur further growth and activity in that sector.
You know, Dorothy, in your comments, you've mentioned financing markets sort of stabilizing and improving. We've seen, obviously, rates find a better level, fives and tens. We found spreads to be a little tighter. How important is a better financing market for overall activity?
I think the financing markets are incredibly important. As we look at corporates at large, we have really sort of healthy balance sheets, but companies and financial sponsors need well-functioning financing markets for M&A and their continuous growth ambitions.
Yeah, and I think just to add to that, you know, debt financing markets are operating really well at the moment. So there's lots of liquidity. The issue debt investors have is a shortage of opportunities. There's a shortage of companies actually looking to come to market. And I think the other theme is that, you know, the cost of financing, it is much higher than recent times, but relative to long-term averages, actually levels are quite normal. And if you look at spreads, which are a good proxy for risk, they are at a materially lower level than long-term averages.
Listen, let's shift for a second. This is a year that has a high number of elections, obviously the US, but globally. 50% of global GDP will have elections this year. Does that have an impact on clients, or is it not a material factor?
It's a super election year in 2024. UK later on this year is just one to point out. And then also, if we look into June, we have the elections for the European Parliament. But why are boards and why are clients looking at elections? They look at the changes nationally, they look at policy changes. And in the environment we're in right now, they also look at, obviously, geopolitical implications of that. Most of our clients, large or small, do run global businesses. So they're not only looking at the elections in the countries where they're based or where they're headquartered, but they really look around the world. Given the size of the US market for many of our clients operating there, they very much also look to the elections in the US in November. That is a big topic in a lot of client dialogues, not only the odds of the different outcomes, but also obviously front and center as part of that, policies and geopolitical implications.
Can we just spend a minute on regulation more broadly? One of the things that we've been hearing in North America is there is a little more uncertainty on deals getting done. There's also a little more uncertainty on the time frame it takes to complete transactions. Are you seeing something similar in the EMEA region?
Yeah, I think we are, David. I mean, that thesis you've posited hasn't been fully tested yet because there hasn't been much M&A over the last year or two in Europe. We're definitely seeing governments being a bit more interventionist and indeed regulators taking a firmer stance when it comes to M&A. What does this mean for the consumer? What does this mean in our market? What does it mean for the industry and the sector? So, you know, if that represented a kind of a risk of 3 or 4 out of 10 pre the last 3-4 years, it's ratcheted up to a much higher level. And I think we're advising clients to be much more forward-thinking about regulatory risks as they contemplate transactions. And there's plenty of example to support reasons for doing that, not least what we've seen in the US, which we're seeing more of in this part of the world.
Great. So let's just bring it back to sort of the overall environment and all things together. Dorothy, when you think about the outlook for M&A broadly this year, is it fair to say that you're more optimistic based on the fundamentals you've just walked through? And if we then, after the M&A conversation, want to shift to the equity environment, I'd love to get your perspective on both.
I think as we look at EMEA, M&A is never just a regional thing because it is cross-border. And we look at this cross-border within our region, but also globally. And against the backdrop that we talked a bit about, there is geopolitical volatility that we need to keep in mind. But generally, I think it is a very constructive backdrop for M&A activity. And cross-border into Europe, we've seen quite a bit of that. I think what we've seen less of, and the year is still just 2.5 months old, is the large multi-billion transformational transactions. However, what we are to seeing is a continued good flow of M&A deals. Cash balances are there for the strategics on the balance sheet. The financing markets are open, are constructive. And most importantly for M&A, it is actually the strategic need. That is unchanged, whether that is driven by technology change, whether that is driven to what Connor said earlier, through consolidation, or whether this is energy transition, just to name a few. But also, if we look a little bit broader, corporate clarity continues to be an important theme because investors reward clarity. That leads to carve-out, it leads to divestitures. Activism is very much a global theme. It is here for us in Europe, and where activists can address M&A as a solution for undervaluation, they try and focus on M&A. There are certain pockets where there is a mismatch in valuation between public and private markets. So that is clearly also a theme that we're seeing with the access and the focus on taking privates in those sectors. And lots been talked about the dry powder that financial sponsors sit on that wants to be deployed. And we see that getting deployed.
Yeah, I think it goes across all of the sectors. And I think we've got quite a lot of companies 2 years into this period of geopolitical uncertainty and economic headwinds sitting on their hands when it comes to deal activity or just thinking, look, now is not the right time, understandably, but who have ambitions to do things of a strategic nature, whether it's spin-offs or carve-outs or raise capital to fund growth, so forth. So I think some of those clients are now getting to the point where, look, we're not going to have the perfect moment. The economic environment is looking like it could be a bit more stable. Maybe now is the time to take that risk.
Yeah, and I think maybe moving on to the second part of your question, David, on the ECM IPO activity levels here in EMEA. Look, we expect the market windows to remain volatile amidst the geopolitical and economic uncertainty to some extent. But we are also seeing a very clear pickup in the activity levels here. And that is because the overall market is constructive. Investors take a keen interest. And if we look at the issuance, we've seen a pickup since the beginning of this year. Yes, quite a lot on the quick-to-market secondary trades on the one-hand side, convertibles, but also, and importantly, we have seen the return of the IPOs, and that is really important for the markets. And reflecting a bit on last year, where we've seen a lot fewer IPOs in EMEA at large, is obviously there is a pipeline there that will come to market and is looking to go to market. But what actually is more interesting is that over the last few months, we've seen an increased new dialogue of companies that want to go to market, interesting stories that look to IPO later on this year, beginning of 2025. So I think that is really great to see. And I think the investors on their side do take an interest in the forward IPO calendar.
Is it fair to say that given the slowness, if you will, of 2023, that you're going to start 24 with the highest quality and most profitable? And then as we test the market this year, we'll see what the market appetite is for growthier or higher risk situations?
I would say that the market and investors are very focused on the quality and obviously valuation sensitive. I think that it is proven stories, it is good growth track record, and also leverage does play an important role here.
And when you say leverage plays an important role, you mean making sure leverage is low enough at time of IPO?
Yes, thanks for clarifying that.
So for our final question, what are we advising boards, what are we advising companies on as they navigate in aggregate the risk factors and the opportunities that you both laid out here?
Maybe just for overall context, first thing to say on that is, it's just interesting to look at how resilient the corporate sector and so many companies have been in the EMEA region over the last 2 years or so. And you think of what they've had to contend with, inflation driving up their cost bases, soaring interest rates driving up the cost of financing, general macroeconomic uncertainty. Despite all of that, we've seen very little corporate or balance sheet distress. So very few companies running out of capital. And on the trading side, you know, profitability has held up quite well. So yeah, these are tough times. They're uncertain times, but companies have been quite resilient and actually feeling just maybe a little bit more confident. But the big question for an awful lot of them is, how do I grow? So those are all factors we expect to drive levels of deal activity and more strategic thinking in the time ahead. I think the key thing for companies when it comes to deal making is stability in the outlook, confidence in the outlook. Deals involve taking risk. What's going on in the economy? Where are interest rates? As a major bearing, you know, interest rates, the cost of borrowing money is so central to how consumers and companies spend and invest, and such a critical measure of the health of the economy. So when you look at ahead in terms of critical factors, interest rates is probably the one top of mind, notwithstanding all the other big things to worry about in the world.
Yeah, and I think we see companies really, over the last 4 years, with what Conor rightly said, is focusing on being prepared. You can't be prepared for the unknown, but I think whether this is the risk dialogue, whether this is dialogue thinking strategically and being prepared when the right opportunity arises, how do you finance in this market? How do you look at that? That level of preparedness, I think, is really the product of what we've seen in terms of evolution, in terms of environment over the last 4 years, because if we go back 10 years, we've gone through a long period of stability with a decade of low interest rate, and just the last 4 years have just shown so many uncertainties come together in a very short period of time that I think boards are very prepared to think very differently about where to not only think about the risk, but to what Conor said, is capture the opportunity and the strategic opportunity, which then goes across to the deal making.
And I think that's right, Dorothy. You used the word opportunity. You know, the other side of all the risk, and that the fact that there will be more shocks. We see over the last 5 to 10 years, we've produced one totally unexpected event after the next in the world. But just on the word opportunity, be ready for opportunity and don't wait for the perfect moment in markets or the environment, whether that's to raise finance or do M&A, because that really perfect moment often doesn't come, or if it does, it tends not to last very long.
Terrific. Listen, I think there's some great advice, and really appreciate your perspective on the market and the outlook as we get through this year. A big thanks, Dorothy, to you and Conor for joining me, and thank you for your valuable insights.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David, for having us.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another What's the Deal episode. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to What's the Deal. If you've enjoyed this conversation, we hope you'll review, rate, and subscribe to JP Morgan's Making Sense to stay on top of the latest industry news and trends. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. To stay ahead of the curve, sign up for JP Morgan's In Context newsletter, packed full of market views and expert insights delivered straight to you. To subscribe, just visit jpmorgan.com/in-context. This material was prepared by the Investment Banking Group of JP Morgan Securities LLC and not the firm's research department. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase, sale, or tender of any financial instrument.